The Doug and Wolf Show.
The next 4 hours of your life will be outstanding wherever you are if you keep listening to The Doug and Wolf Show.
You're calling your shot.
I'm
right
calling
now.
My shot on today's show.
Doug Franz, Ron Wolfley.
You know that's good radio.
Oh, yeah.
Doug and Wolf, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Good Monday morning. We have Darcy Kuemper. They do not. Unfortunately, the rest of the world does not have Larry Scott, and we do.
Oh, Douglas, where do you want to begin? We say good Monday morning to you.
I begin at 132, 182, 065, 167, 208, and 063. The batting averages of Escobar, Peralta, Calhoun, Kelly, and Lamb.
No, I cannot get over it, ladies and gentlemen. To me, right now, the number one thought that I have on my head is the fact that the Coyotes are up on the Predators, baby, in a five-game series. Look out! By the frickin' up my thumb, something wicked this way comes, Ozzie! Gather on the transistor and press the ear, ladies and gentlemen, because I think we all know what's coming. Way to go, Bear. Command and control. That's right. It's an Ozzy Osbourne Monday on the Doug and Wolf Show, courtesy of your Coyotes, ladies and gentlemen. Are you kidding me? Up 4-1, and then what happened?
Back of the moon.
Michael grabbed her. Unbelievable, Douglas. And then they went into that proverbial, hey, we might actually win this game. They went into that. It was like they collectively fought that. And suddenly it was, get it out! Get it out! Get it out! Just get it out of your end. They stopped looking for their shot. I thought it looked that way. They went into a protective shell. But what a game.
And I hate the shell.
Oh, what a game.
The Coyotes jump, and both teams are going to go into game two thinking, they gave up all these fluke goals. The first goal of the game, a deflected shot off a stick of a defender, off a chest of a defenseman, over the goalie's shoulder who didn't see the puck, and into the net. And yet two of the three goals by the Preds were off the skate and or calf muscle of one of the Coyotes defensemen.
Yes.
So both teams are sitting there thinking, hey, we dominated at times in this game, but the Coyotes certainly outplayed the Preds through most of the game. And the Predators had one of those big decisions that every coach in the world has to deal with. Do you go to the guy with the guy that deserves it over his career, or do you go with the guy that's the hotter hand and the guy that has helped get you there? And they decided to bench Pecorine for game run, one of the greatest goaltender in Predators history and one of the better goalies ever.
One of the best names ever.
It is true. I thought they made exactly the right decision in a normal year. If you don't have coronavirus and you go right into the playoffs, I think that's 100% the right decision. Go with the hot hand. Your job is to win. And if you alienate people on your way to a cup, who cares?
Yes.
But when you have a four-month layoff, don't you go with the experienced guy?
I don't know, Douglas.
I think that was a terrible decision on their part.
I don't know, once again, but I do know this right now. I am fascinated. Anybody that has listened to this broadcast, the Doug and Wolf Show, over the years, ladies and gentlemen, you know how fascinated I am with what lies within, individually and collectively. Mm-hmm. And just to watch the Coyotes come out. Did you see that first period? They came out, they had nothing to lose. Absolutely nothing to lose. And they played like it. They came out skating, hitting, scoring. They came out and they were, hey, listen, we're not even supposed to be here. Mm-hmm. You could just see it. They came out in that first period and they had nothing to lose. And then all of a sudden when they got up 4-1, it was like, gulp.
Which brings up the question, how are they going to come out in game two?
Hey, you know what? Hopefully it worked in game one. try to pull that Jedi mind trick again in game two?
I assume so. There's so many things to get to. The starting five this morning, I have 9 things. Really? Not that we're going to do them all.
Let's go with the starting 9.
But I had 9 things staring at me for the starting five. And the one thing I told you, the positive in the world is that we have Darcy Kuemper and nobody else does. And right. The negative in the world is we have Larry Scott and nobody else does.
No.
Let me ask you this crazy question. Do you think there's a reason that it's been since 1937 ASU and U of A have played in September? Do you think there's probably a good, strong theory behind that?
Yeah.
Larry Scott, you had one job. If it's a rivalry, put it at the end of the year. And someone's going to say, no, they should stagger the rivalry. Why do you mess with the tradition of the game and decide we're just going to throw crap on the wall and make this schedule any way that we want, which makes absolutely no sense with their jigsaw puzzle work of the schedule? So ASU U of A, September 26th. Thanks, Larry. Thanks.
You know what? Honestly, I played in a game at the end of September at Sun Devil Stadium. Abandon all hope.
No, oh, yeah.
They're here. Let me tell you right now.
Now, I'm assuming it's going to be at night, so you have that. Your games were at 1 o'clock.
No, I'm just telling you right now, it was absolutely brutal. I don't care when you play that. It's going to be brutal.
Yeah, yeah. And at least there's 2 teams that think that they know what it's going to be like. It'll be tough to narrow this down. One of the things that did not make the starting five this morning, but it's actually one of my favorite stories there are.
Right.
Has there ever been a time in your life where you got canned, you got fired, or you were at least pushed out?
Yeah.
And then you're at a convention, you're at a get-together, you're at an event where the guy that canned you is staring at you for 3 hours?
No.
Sunday in Memphis, Justin Thomas, last week, his caddy was dehydrated and overheated. He called his dad out of the crowd, who's his swing coach, and his dad caddied for him. So then this weekend, going into this tournament, he didn't have a caddy. So who does he ask? He calls Bones McKay out of retirement.
Bones?
To be his caddy. Guess who Justin Thomas is paired with on Sunday? Phil Mickelson. The guy that fired Bones McKay after a 23-year relationship.
Well, it was a mutual party.
So Phil stared at the guy
that
he
canned.
That's what
everybody says, by the way.
And oh, by the way, Justin Thomas beat Phil by 3 and won the World Golf Championship event. I mean,
that would be a little unnerving. Though.
No doubt. That's a crazy story. Hey, let me spend 4 hours with the guy that fired me. And oh, by the way, I win, you lose.
Right. You know, we just deadball him, lock eyes with him immediately and say, want to go right now? Yeah. Get it out of the way. Is that what you want?
And they didn't. And they didn't have to. And Bones McKay makes a nice little chunk of change for the for his weekend to work. But that did not make the starting five this morning. It's brought to you by San Chevrolet. San Chevrolet, your home team for no payments until 2021 and select models. Head to sanchevrolet.com for details.
And now, it's time for your Arizona Sports Starting Five.
Really, Ben?
You can't go to work without knowing these 5 huge stories.
It's a Monday.
Here's DeFrantz and Ron Wolfley.
Good morning, Vince.
Number five
this morning is the Pac-12 in general. 3 big stories coming out of the Pac-12. One is the craziness of the football schedule and the rivalries being staggered throughout the year. ASU, U of A, and USC, UCLA week 1. Other big news across the country as it relates to Pac-12 is a group of players in Pac-12 football wrote a letter to the Players Tribune saying, here's a list of demands we've got to have for us to be able to play college football this year, or we're not going to play. The oddity of this is the things they're asking for either A, violates Title IX, which is federal civil rights legislation, or B, would eliminate the Pac-12 from all college championships that are held by the NCAA if the Pac-12 actually went along with everything they're asking for. And the last thing is Remy Martin withdrew his name from the NBA draft. So now Alonzo Verge and Remy Martin are both returning to the ASU backcourt.
Boy, and Bobby Hurley is getting ready to throw a party.
Yes.
Number four,
DeAndre Hopkins has a Cardinals jersey. Everybody's passed a physical. No more talk about anything. He's in the building. Bill O'Brien can't take the trade back. Everything's official. DeAndre Hopkins, Isaiah Simmons, media day in their jerseys.
That's right, because when they come out with the hype video, it's all over.
It is.
Number three.
Number three. Arizona Diamondbacks, nice win on Friday. Nice win. Nice win. Arizona Diamondbacks lose on Saturday 11-2. They get shut out yesterday 3-0, and this team looks pathetic right now. They are 3-7 on the season, and a sixth of the season is already gone. That's like being deeply buried in at the end of April. And, oh, by the way, every team in the National League West right now would be in the playoffs if the playoffs started today, except the Diamondbacks.
It's at a point of critical mass right now for the D-backs.
Mm-hmm.
Number two.
Number two this morning. We talked about it most of this beautiful part of the program. The Arizona Coyotes, a winner over the Nashville Predators. It's only a five-game series, and the Yotes take game one 4-3. Off day today, and then a back-to-back games two and three Tuesday and Wednesday at 11:30 in the morning. That's strange.
Oh, sorry. The weight of a three... My microphone was off. Of a three-goal lead can be destructive, can it not?
Number one.
And the number one thing you need to know about this morning in one of the ugliest games ever, who cares? Suns a winner, 117-115, and they double down from their win on Friday. They are 2-0. Can you dream? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Like we said, if you just tuned in this morning, Stung and Wolf with Wolf, Maloney, and Mitch. No, Wolf, Bear, and Mitch today, as Maloney has a couple days off.
Mitch!
Broadcasting live from the Auction Community Studios this morning. And the like I said, nine different things could have made the starting five this morning. It was pretty difficult to actually go through so many things. But the thing we decided was number one was Suns taking on the Wizards and the Mavericks and picking up two victories over the weekend. DeAndre Ayton on Friday was just a masterpiece of a game. DeAndre Ayton on Sunday was an utter embarrassment. So it really, however you've argued on the Doug and Wolf Show as a listener on the future of DeAndre Ayton, you were right this weekend.
Over the weekend, you
if you've been yelling and screaming, when are people going to respect this young man, give the kid a break, he's going to be great, you got everything you've been asking for on Friday. And if you've been yelling and screaming, is this kid ever going to get it? Is he ever going to be competitive? Is he ever going to fight? Is he ever going to do the things to win a basketball game? Well, you were right yesterday. And then on top of it, D-Book fouling out of a game and being in foul trouble the whole game, and the Suns giving up 33 free throw points. 33 of 37 were the Mavericks from the free throw line. I have no idea about two things in this game. A, how the Suns won. And B, how much money Rubio is paying the statistician to only give him two turnovers.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, the unbelievable, ladies and gentlemen, the Phoenix Suns right now are 2-0 in the bubble. I mean, just let that settle in, baby. This is exactly why we play the games, Basinonians. This is why we can make all the predictions we want all day long, and the competitor doesn't care. He doesn't care what I think. He doesn't care what you think. He doesn't care what anybody thinks, because it doesn't matter. It's not going to impact the game. You can make all the predictions in the world. It doesn't matter. All that matters is you keeping your head down, your eyes up, and giving all that you have, man. And that's exactly what I wanted to see the Suns do down in the bubble. Compete. And they did.
The Suns did so many things wrong, but so did the Mavericks. But what was amazing is how, no matter how many things went wrong, especially the officiating, I thought the Suns' game plan at the start of the game was terrible.
Right.
I look at Monty Williams, who's, I think, a great coach, and I have to ask, what were you doing in the last 2 days? I mean, it was a horrible game plan. And yet, the officiating, I normally would be going nuts on the officiating if it wasn't for the fact of how bad the game plan was and how bad I thought neither team deserved to win. I think that the officiating was typical NBA terrible officiating, but both teams played worse than the refs, so I don't blame, I don't have anything negative about the refs. This game was simply who could handle all of the adversity that was coming at them the most. And the answer was the Phoenix Suns. And I forgot to plug in the big cord right here that says green plugs in here.
It's just a lot of competitive guys with a ton of drive and will. And like I just told them, this was what I wanted to experience in this bubble, was something like this, where we just – had our backs against the wall, and across the board, we got efforts from everybody. Even though we didn't make the smartest plays tonight in the first half, in the second half, that third quarter, we won 36-19.
Oh, see, this
and
is
it was
what,
just will.
It was just will.
It was just will right there. You know, will to compete, will to go out.
Because you can will yourself to victory.
Have. No, you cannot, Douglas.
That's what
it was
did.
Just the will right there to go out. I totally agree with Monty. I totally agree with him. That's what the Suns did. This is what I wanted to see from them. Competitive fire. Listen, they got down by 15 in this game. And you know what happened? The Suns' two best players on the floor got into serious foul trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And the much maligned bench had to come in and do what, Basinonians? Win the game, basically. And guess what happened? On the way to the coronation, a competition broke out. Totally agree with Monty. Did they play their best? No, they did not. But I can tell you right now, they competed in this game. And that's what I wanted to see, and that's what I want to continue to see, them go out and compete. Incredible.
What was really neat is Monty had been saying this for a while, that it was games like this was why he wanted to be in this bubble. And he didn't come out, he did not say, I don't care whether we win or lose. Of course he cares if they win or lose. But it was about coming together and competing in that type of environment in that game. And they did just that. And it's kind of a wake-up call to a lot of the bench guys of understanding the game better and increasing your basketball IQ of what it means to play on the court with Booker and Ayton and what it means to play on the court without Booker and Ayton. And there was an amazing freedom in that third quarter when Ayton really made one of the dumbest plays he's made as an NBA player in picking up a fourth foul so early. And Booker then getting knocked out because of a foul. And all this, the freedom of the offense, the ball movement, the player movement, and everybody felt like, it's okay for me to shoot. I don't have to have the question of, why are you taking that shot when D-Book's on the floor? And it's not, don't shoot because D-Book's on the floor. It's don't take stupid forced shots with D-Book on the floor. And suddenly, when they had a freedom of feeling like we're not going to make a mistake anyway, they didn't make mistakes. The best basketball that was played in that game was stretches of the third quarter with Booker and Ayton on the bench.
Yes. No, absolutely. It was so funny. Eddie Johnson made the comment on the broadcast that it's like the Mavericks don't know who to guard.
Yes, yes, yes.
That was so funny, EJ. No doubt about it. But right now, you're talking about the ball movement as well. Raise your hand, Basinonians, if you were the guy yelling, no way did you just make that shot, Cameron Payne. Right? I mean.
Me.
No, why are you making these?
It was, I felt good that I have done a good enough job raising my 15-year-old, soon-to-be 16-year-old daughter, who on both of those three said, that's such a bad shot, as the ball was being shot, and they both go in that third.
You're like, nobody shoots it like you, Cammy.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, man, that was electrifying watching these guys go out there. Cameron Payne, you can say what you want about Cameron Payne. I'll tell you right now, that's a dog. I don't know where his NBA career is going to go, where it's going to lead him, and whether or not he's going to stick around long enough to actually have a double-digit career. But I can tell you right now, Cameron Payne, that's a dog.
So the Suns go 2-0. There are games today. San Antonio and Memphis are both on a back-to-back today. Memphis is against New Orleans. San Antonio's against Philly. It almost doesn't matter who wins the Memphis-New Orleans game because the Suns need to catch New Orleans, but they also need to stay within four games of Memphis. They actually have accomplished the latter. The Suns now are in that playoff window where they would have a two-game series against Memphis because they're within four games of Memphis. There's just one catch to that. They have to pass the four teams that are still between them and Memphis to be in that. But they are four games behind Memphis now, and San Antonio, Portland, New Orleans, and Sacramento are still above them, and they've got to pass those teams. San Antonio's against Philadelphia, so that's an easy thing for us to choose. Always root for an Eastern Conference team, but the 76ers are a little banged up. And then the Suns are in action, here you go, against the Clippers on Tuesday. Going to be really interesting to see how much the Clippers care. We all know if it's straight up or if this was an actual playoff game, the Suns would get smashed by the Clippers. But the Clippers are a team that they had their big showing against the Lakers and lost on Thursday night's opening night. I don't think they're going to take the Suns all that seriously. So it's going to be really interesting to see whether or not Doc puts everything into that game or whether or not he rests some guys and the Suns could try to steal one.
Once again, the great thing about this, Basinonians, it is a competition. It's not a coronation. It doesn't matter what any of us say or think. It's not going to impact the game. You get to go out there, roll the ball on the court, and give all that you have. Yeah. That's what you get.
By the way, with this weekend of the way things unfolded in the Pac-12 and the way things are unfolding in Major League Baseball, can Larry Scott and Rob Manfred call a press call a conference? They can keep it quiet. Nobody needs to know. Just a Zoom call, and ask Gary Bettman and Adam Silver to give them lessons on how to be a commissioner. Ugh, the NHL looked so good this weekend. The NBA has looked fantastic since the beginning, and then you just have baseball and the Pac-12 embarrassing themselves. Coming up next, the D-backs 3-7, and please don't tell me it's because they're playing the Dodgers. There's a problem. It's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. If you don't think there's a problem right now with the Arizona Diamondbacks, and admittedly, it is a strange, strange situation, as the Diamondbacks are far and away the worst team in Major League Baseball. Not even close right now with the way that they're playing. Yet, they're two games out of the playoff spot. I mean, it can turn around fast if they figure this out. But when I saw this stat, this is a really easy stat. I mean, this one is not going to – I mean, when you talk about being floored by something, it's probably not going to be hard to guess if I tell you who's in last place in home runs this year as a team.
Diamondbacks.
Now, here's where it really gets a little screwy. Cole Calhoun, I think it was opening day. I might be wrong, and it was game two. He hit a home run. And then in this homestand, I believe it was Thursday, Ketel Marte hit a home run. They have two home runs. Here's the problem. They're below the Marlins, who have played three games. The Marlins have played three games. The Brewers have played six. Both of those teams are tied for 28th in Major League Baseball with five home runs. Those two teams have hit three home runs, and yet they have played combined one fewer game. So they are combined at 10. The Diamondbacks are at 2 in fewer games. It is frightening in a hitter's ballpark just how terrible this offense is right now for the Arizona Diamondbacks.
So if we said the D-backs have hit just two homers through 10 games, the lowest total in the majors, yet they've also given up 18 home runs.
Yes, yes.
The most in baseball. Do you think that's the makings of a last-place win-loss record?
Yeah, probably.
It doesn't get much simpler than that, does it, Paul? We've given up the most, and we hit the least.
On Saturday alone, the D-backs allowed four home runs. Dodgers had four home runs in nine innings. whereas the D-backs had had two home runs in 9 games. That was as of Saturday night.
Yeah, honestly, coming into this series, we all knew this was going to be a measuring stick series. It was. Mm-hmm. It was the Dodgers. The Dodgers might be the best team in baseball, and frankly, they looked that way, did they not?
Yeah.
The difference in performance was palpable. The Dodgers beat the Diamondbacks in every way possible, Ron Wolfley reporting. Starting pitching, bullpen, lineup. Not even close.
That's
the fact of it.
There's not a lot of positives right now for the Arizona Diamondbacks right now.
Bottom line is these guys have to perform, and it's up to me to make sure that on a given day that I give the right guy the day off, and we figure out what to do and how to do it moving forward. It's the hardest part of my job, but it's probably the most enjoyable part of my job because it takes a lot of effort, it takes a lot of thought, and it takes a lot of getting to know the players and what makes them tick.
This is an organizational meltdown. If I give you the names Escobar, Peralta, Ahmed, Calhoun, Kelly, and Lamb, that's a pretty good chunk of the guys that's supposed to be producing. Highest batting average out of those six, Carson Kelly's 208. Mm. Best on base average, and you want your on base percentage to be around 400, is Cole Calhoun's 324. Bad, but not a disaster. The problem is the next one drops all the way down to Carson Kelly at 269. And here's where we talk about the home runs, Paul. You want your slugging percentage to be above 500, is like the, kind of the goal, is a special slugging percentage. The highest is Calhoun at 300, 200 points off. Slugging Escobar, 180. Peralta 212, Ahmed 065, and Jake Lamb 125. I mean, this is historically bad offense. You combine that with Merrill Kelly versus the world and sprinkle in a little Zach Gallen, and that's it from the starting pitching. You got to wonder, why is this organization so far behind the other 29 teams?
I heard Bob Brenly throw out a stat after the game that not only are they hitting 192 as a team, yes, but through 10 games a year ago, they were hitting 288. Right now, the slugging percentage is 265.
Yes.
Think about that.
Yes.
And then, and to your point, Doug, about the disparity between the offense and the pitching staff, if this was an NFL locker room, you'd have the makings of one of those Buddy Ryan Cardinals teams back in the day.
I don't know, because
I mean, seriously,
both sides are so terrible. How can one side say we're better than we're carrying it and you're not?
But there's such an absence of offense,
yeah,
that it's almost like the two sides of the clubhouse are going to start brawling back in Buddy Ryan's days when the Cardinals had zero offense and the defense let the offense know they had zero offense.
Got a winner in town.
Thank you.
I would say, especially yesterday, Paulie, I mean, I thought Merrill Kelly deserved better.
Yeah.
You know, I really thought Merrill Kelly has been
the only runs are home runs to back to both the year, last year's MVPs.
Yeah, right. Right, exactly. You know, he's been the best starter in the rotation through two turns of the wheel, I would say, right now, right? I mean, he's actually done a really, really nice job, and that team is loaded. That lineup is absolutely loaded, Ron Wolfley reporting, and I thought he played and pitched really, really well. I thought he deserved better.
So is this a Skip Bayless hot take here? If I say, when Doug gives the numbers, how poor, how epically bad the offense is right now, and it's through the entire lineup. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking bad at bats by virtually everybody. Swinging at bad first pitches, not working the count.
Ketel Marte and Christian Walker versus the world right now.
Right. And so is the hitting coach in jeopardy right now? Is Darnell Coles possibly in the crosshairs if this doesn't turn around quick? And this team needs to do something, make a statement for some reason to just let everyone know and convey the urgency right now and that jobs are on the line. If nothing else, you can't change your entire roster, but you can change out the hitting coach. And I wonder if that's a consideration in the near future.
I really believe it's 0 to 3% chance during the season. But I could really easily see it happen at the end of the season. And the reason why would be last year they got off to a good start. offensively. And then, and you already mentioned it with their high average at the beginning of the year, but then their at-bats really tailed off from what the organization wants. And we had the general manager on, Mike Hazen, during the World Series. And I remember him saying, what we want is what you saw, and he started labeling different at-bats during the World Series of guys battling like crazy, fouling pitches off, making pitchers work, doing all the things that the Diamondbacks want their hitters to be doing. And it's been so horrible, the at-bats themselves this year and the lack of abilities to actually see pitches, especially in that San Diego series, last game against the Rangers, most of the games against the Dodgers. And when you see it happen year to year where the players are doing exactly the opposite of what the organization is asking, yeah, Paul, I think at the end of the year.
Yeah, it's not good, Basin Owings. It is not. And we all know this is a sprint, and because of that, the pressure is coming down on everybody. You can hear it in Torrey's voice. Hear it in Torrey. Just listening to Torrey right now, and this is the thing, Basin Owings, as a former player, I'm sorry, but I always think of what's going on inside that clubhouse. What's going on inside that locker room? Who's stepping up right now? Who's doing the talking, and who's hiding?
They've already had their players-only meeting.
That's what I want to know.
Already had a players-only meeting, and they turned around and went 1-2 after the players-only meeting.
This is an honest question.
Well, that's better than the alternative.
Somebody
3-9.
Help me understand Torrey Lovello's comment yesterday after the game where he said, we got sucker-punched in the San Diego series to open the season, and we've never recovered. I need further elaboration on that. What do you mean you got sucker punched by the Padres? Look, I know it's been 10 years since the Padres have even had a winning record, so you were shocked and surprised and bum-rushed by the Padres in the opening series, and that still is a hangover? That's still impacting play today?
Here, I hope he didn't mean this, Paul, but it's frighteningly similar to the way he talked about a series or two last year in August when everything started to fall apart. And it was, and we talk about, like, I think a general manager has to sit there and decide it's over, or we've got a chance, or he's got to have a long-term view. You don't want any player or any manager ever even remotely thinking you don't have a chance until you are mathematically eliminated. And guess what? They did that last year. They talked about during the year, here are series that we really haven't come back from yet. I think he's saying the same thing. I don't think this is a mentally tough team. I don't think, these are the same players you had last year that fell apart. And now the pressure that everybody knew, start fast, start fast, start fast. And now what are we talking about? We're talking about the guys pressing because they're feeling the pressure of not starting fast. You got a bunch of guys on this team that I thought were fighters, and they're not. They need things to go their way to compete.
Who called the players only meeting?
I have heard it was a group, but mostly led by Eduardo Escobar.
Eduardo Escobar. Okay. That's a good place to start.
But maybe the subject of the meeting need to be what Doug just referenced and what Torrey was talking about. You know, that F word, fragile, fragile. Is that what's going on right now? I mean,
I don't want to say yes, but I don't have a better answer, Paul. Coming up next, we got a playoff team in town. Maybe. Just maybe the way that Christian Fisher hits, we can get him to bat for the Diamondbacks. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Tim Kirkjian, one of the best baseball historians and insiders there are, going to join us in 15 minutes. Let him to try to solve the Diamondbacks' problems, and that'll make you feel good. The Diamondbacks win one game this weekend, and we really want to thank Dave Roberts for that win. Everybody in baseball who's paying attention knows Diamondbacks only have one or two guys that can hit. Don't walk someone in front of Christian Walker. Oh, wait, it's Dave Roberts. Of course we'll walk someone in front of Christian Walker.
With the smirk, Dave.
Yeah.
We see the smirk, Dave, even though you're wearing the mask.
And as much as we feel beat down by the Diamondbacks, we do have something that'll make you feel better.
And now Kessel holding Dvorak. Look to get it across. A shot. They score! Clayton Keller has made it a 3-0 lead for the Coyotes.
Yes.
I mean, what an amazing start for the Coyotes to be up 3-0, kick in the face to give up a goal at the end of the first and beginning of the third. Like, what just happened here? But, oh, the Coyotes ride Darcy Kuemper, and it's only a 5-game series, and they've won game one.
Doug Lease, this is the first time the Coyotes have had a lead in a series since May 7th of 2012. Think about that for a minute. May 7th of 2012. And guess who it was against? The Predators.
Oh, yeah.
How about that, man? What a game.
Because I believe off the top of my head, didn't it go Blackhawks, Predators, and then the series against the Kings?
Yes, I'm trying to remember, but you know that's difficult. I'm trying to remember what I had for dinner last night. The Coyotes have nothing to lose, and they came out and played like it. Mm. I love that first period. You go back and look at it. They came out flying. They came out skating, hitting, right, bearing the puck when you had the opportunity. Yes, there was a couple of lucky bounces. Was there not, OEL? There's no doubt about that. But, man, to me, this team did something special, and I wonder where it's going to lead them in Game 2.
That's a huge point. Game 2 and 3, the off day today for everybody, except for the Cardinals. Cardinals will be in Tempe working out and doing the strengthening and the conditioning portion of training camp before they go to Glendale. But the Coyotes, the Diamondbacks, and the Suns are all off today. But then they're all in action tomorrow. And the Coyotes have back-to-back games Tuesday, Wednesday, at 11:30 in the morning. Mm. And this is now, okay, you were able to handle being a playoff team, clearly, the way you started. So that didn't intimidate you. But the Nashville Predators have been one of those teams all year that's been like, I'll say it like the Diamondbacks, you're supposed to be a playoff team, play like it. Now, they got into the playoffs, but they just haven't been as good as they could have been. And now they're faced with adversity. And for the first time, I think Vegas would tell you the Coyotes would be favored to win the series now. Not only winning game one, but of the way Darcy Kuemper looked. So how do the Coyotes respond to no longer being the little engine that could, but being a favorite?
You've got to handle pressure by going after the pressure, you know. Phil and Halsey and Debo, their line was great. I thought O was, you know, outstanding. You could tell that he took charge a lot of the plays out there. Kemp's was great. So, we just can't have passengers. This team, we can't afford to have four or five, six guys not have their game. We need everybody to play. And those guys really, you're right, they brought it to a different level. And that's nice to see.
You know, it's so fascinating, Doug Lease, in that second period. Did you see Michael Grabner's shorthanded goal, right? What a nice goal that was.
Ryan Johansson leads for Josi, and now over the line, Forsberg's got it, but it's taken away, and here's Grabner. Grabner is in shorthanded. Michael Grabner scores!
Oh, that was so sweet, too, Grabs. No doubt about it. What an awesome death knell that was right there, right? Taking a 4-1 lead in this game.
Coyotes had two shots on that power play shorthanded. The Predators had one.
But after they scored that goal, it looked like they started gripping a little bit.
Yeah, they did.
Right?
They seemed
to go into a shell. Instead of carrying the puck out of their end and looking for their own shot, they started just, get it out, right? And you know, oh my goodness, when that mentality takes over, you're playing scared.
Oh yeah, and thanks to Fox Sports Arizona for that play-by-play. I tell you, Matt and Tyson did a really nice job yesterday. Out of all the sports, it's got to be the toughest to do play-by-play of hockey remotely. Okay, basketball, yeah. You could do it. Maybe it's too hard in football. I don't know. Baseball's reasonably easy as long as the ball doesn't go in the corners when you're 1,000 miles away and you have no idea where the ball is. But oh my gosh, to be able to do hockey remotely has got to be tough. And they did a good job on their broadcast yesterday. But that to me is now okay. That's the defining line. Now that you've proven that you could win, how do you feel about just holding on for dear life like they did? And can they eliminate that feeling and do something about it? I'm going to play for you something I've already played, but I admit I did a lot of work on these bad Diamondback stats. Okay, And when I heard Rick Tocchet say this, I didn't think about the Coyotes' win. I don't question whether the Coyotes can handle it. I hear this, and I'm thinking Diamondbacks.
You got to handle pressure by going after the pressure, you know.
I think of Tony La Russa when I see it.
Yeah, yeah. He says you got to learn to embrace it. Make it your friend.
Absolutely.
And that's what pressure is.
Yeah, you've got to handle pressure by going after pressure, right?
Mm-hmm.
Say it again. Play it again, Douglas. Let me listen to this.
You got to handle pressure by going after the pressure.
You got to handle pressure by going after the pressure.
Yeah.
You know what? That's honestly, it looked like that's what they did in that first period. And after that, I would say, especially when they took that 4-1 lead, it looked like they woke up and looked around and said, we could actually win this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then when that realization took over, you could almost see it collectively happen, right? Individual by individual, suddenly the Coyotes were just get it out. They went into a shell. I don't think they kept the pressure on.
Right.
And I think that's the reason why the Predators got back into the game, right? But listen, you talk to hockey players, Basinonians, they'll tell you the weight of a 3-goal lead in hockey can be destructive.
Now, of course, we had one of those big round robins with the ArizonaSports.com website. And of course, there's nothing from Wolf. And they asked for predictions. And I said, Coyotes are beating Nashville. And I said, I do think that they get slaughtered in the next round, I admit. But I think that they are beating Nashville. But the one thing I never took into account is if they make a trade for Taylor Hall and Phil Kessel. I mean, Taylor Hall's been okay this year. Phil Kessel has been horribly below advertised this year. Those two both had 2 assists last night.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Yesterday.
Their best players stepped up.
You suddenly add those two to the mix who it felt like they haven't really been as good as they could be most of the year. This isn't even remotely the same team that played the regular season. If you drop those two in there, man, this is fun. Coyotes 1-0, Suns 2-0. So far, their bubble is working well. Diamondbacks not in the bubble. They're 3-7, and it looks really bad. Tim Kirkchin, Baseball Insider. Are we even going to have a baseball postseason? What about the threat levied by the commissioner? And does he have any faith in the Diamondbacks turning this thing around? How late is early? That's next with the Baseball Insider number one, Tim Kirkchin on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.